So it's empty again for Roethlisberger. Three right, two left for the veteran. He's in a shotgun. Dropping the throw. Steps up. Now he's going to get hit. Ball is out. The ball is out. Telvin Smith picks it up and runs along the right sideline. Inside the 30, the 20, the 10, the 5. Touchdown. Telvin Smith is running back, and it's a touchdown for Jacksonville.
David. Football. Football David. The Dave Dameshek Football Program. Available on iTunes and at davedameshek.nfl.com. Now here's your host, Dave Dameshek.
Nah, not really, football fans. This is MJD here, and I've actually hijacked the show. I was surprised that we were going to have a show this week, to be honest with you, after what the Jags did to the Pittsburgh Steelers. But let me bring in my old pal, Dave Dameshek, everybody.
Hello, Maurice.
Hold on. So, Sheck, let me ask you a question.
You're looking well.
Thank you. I appreciate it. You know, 0 degrees, it doesn't really do me well because I'm a tropical human being. But, you know, the Jags were able to do it. They were able to come out. So how did that make you feel to see Jacksonville come up from Florida to their second home of Pittsburgh and Heinz Field, where the Jags have dominated for years, do this again?
Sorrowful.
Did history repeat itself?
Is that a good word to use?
No, it's not a good word.
What do you want me to tell you? I'm sick. I'm sick about it.
Are you?
My heart's heavy.
So
does that make you happy?
Why did you tweet me Mazel Tov?
Because that was classy.
Don't give me class.
That's not classy.
I don't want class from a Pittsburgh Steelers fan. I want just downright.
What do you want me to do? Send you a video of me weeping?
No, I want you to talk trash to me. Like, you guys got lucky. That's what true fans do.
My sincere reaction is to feel sad.
Okay, real quick. So when the Jags, I got three questions.
All right.
The Jags went forward on 4th and 2. How did you feel?
All right. You want to get into it? Let's get into all of it. And by the way, Cliff Averill's coming up. The Wolf, another one
Sheck,
in the winner's circle.
This is my part
right
of the show. You don't
get
to say
it.
All that. Do you
all
just
right.
Answer
I'm
the question.
Just letting everybody know what's happening.
You can do that after this part. This is my part of the show. Right. Answer the question. 4th and 2. Jags are going forward. How'd you feel?
I was surprised in the moment. First of all, I thought they're going for this. Uh-oh. I don't want them to go for it here.
Right, you wanted them to kick a field goal.
I wanted them to kick the field goal, of course, because I feared what might happen, and of course Fournette went in. I will say, in a game that was 45-42, there were a number of significant plays, by definition, if the score is that there would be a lot of big plays over the course of the game. I thought that was the
–
or in the top two or three biggest moments of that entire game was that they went for it and got it and ran right into him and scored. That set a tone that the Steelers are not – because the premise you would think is they're just going to try to suppress points all day. But instead, wow, a little bit of – three's not good enough.
Well, so I'll tell you this. There was right before that. So we finished doing our hits for game day morning, me and Amber.
That's what I want to hear about. I want to hear about your day.
Well, yeah, I'll tell you about all that. So we finished the hits, and me and my kids were on the field. And so the Jaguars are running out. Paul Posluszny sees me and goes, hey, gives me a big hug before the game. I talk to a couple of the guys. They run out. They do their thing. Well, we walk over to their side. And so after they do the coin toss, Pittsburgh wins the toss, and they defer. And so
I thought great start. That's how Tomlin should do. He sometimes doesn't. What's the ball to start?
I felt like they should have taken the ball in that situation, though, because your defense is for some reason that defense doesn't match well with that offense the Jaguars have. So I don't know why. But anyways, the kickoff happens and I'm looking at, you know, me and my kids are looking at through the Jaguar sideline, and Telvin Smith is talking trash to somebody. I mean, I don't know who it is, but the scene of the smoke coming off of him and then all the other players, that was amazing. So that's where the 0 degrees comes in. It was great for that.
I heard it wasn't really that cold because of the sun.
No, it warmed up. But when we got there at 7 a.m., it was 0 degrees. I think it ended up being like around 11 or 10, maybe 9. But then the 4th and 2. So we're on that sideline. I mean, we're sitting there on the sideline, like right there. Me and my kids, they end up kicking us off because my kids aren't old enough to be on the sideline. But we did our best. And first of all, the Pittsburgh people, all the people there were great. I mean, they took
care of my kids. Did you eat well on Saturday night?
I couldn't because I had my babies. We had to go to bed early. We got in we took a red eye from LA there. So we didn't get in until 10 a.m. and we stayed up all day, played in the snow. I got videos. It was awesome.
Excellent.
And then went and ate at a diner. I forgot the name of it, but they were great there. It was a great experience. But that when they went for it on fourth and two, in my mind, I was like, this is the game. This was the game.
Can I tell you? I mean, that sounds hyperbolic, but I'm kind of with you. I felt the same thing.
Because if they stopped the state, I mean, it was so loud, it was crazy. My kids were like getting goosebumps. They wanted to sit in the stands. We had a great time, but it was like when they played Renegade and everyone starts going crazy, and he goes over and gets it. Then it was just complete silence. And so I thought if they would have stopped him, the stadium would have erupted, mm-hmm. right? And those kind of moments, like you said, were huge. The next one was
– Nails, man. Marone.
Well, they knew it. They knew going in, like, this is – we're in four-down territory. I mean, that was the whole game plan. Whenever they got inside the five, they were in four – or inside – I don't know if it was a five, but they had a yard where they were, you know, four-down territory.
That impacted Tomlin's decision a little later to then go for it in the first yeah. time he went for it on yeah. fourth down. If they just kick a field goal there, Tomlin likely matches that with three of his own.
So then – 21-0 mm-hmm. thought process.
Well, you're jumping ahead. The one bad moment in my book for Roethlisberger, I guess he also held on to the ball a little bit too long when it got to 21-0. But the other significant play, the most significant play of the first half, was that floater that Roethlisberger threw out to the sideline.
Oh, and Jack
your boy
it
Miles
off.
Jack picked off. As soon as the ball left his hand, you thought, what, did you not remember the last game?
That wasn't the one, because
I kind of say it just sailed lazily out there. That
I'll
was
tell
awful.
You the other play too. That really it was the sack fumble where Telvin picked it up and scored.
Yeah,
that changed the whole. Because anytime a defense scores, they say the percentage of you if your defense scores, the percentage of you winning the game shoots up like to 80%. And so those are called miscellaneous touchdowns. And that's where the Jaguars usually get you in those situations.
I will tell you, I am generally pretty pessimistic where my teams are concerned. I do not puff my chest out in advance of games and think, oh, things are going to work out for me. I'm always thinking things are going to go against us. When they got the 21-0, I got a weird sense of, all right, if they can score, I still think this is a game, even though this is the league's – I've been talking about it all yeah. through the season. You know, it was a nightmare. If you told me in advance of the game the Jags would get up 21-0, I would say, obviously the Steelers have no chance of rallying. But there was a sense in my gut, this game's not over
well,
yet.
Well, the issue is this. When you're up 21-0, you tend to go real conservative and try to just let them throw things in front of you and you rally and tackle and – they just kind of moved down the field, and that's when I think Big Ben was able. I think Le'Veon had was the first touchdown, right, where he threw it behind him. Was that the first touchdown?
No. The first touchdown for the Steelers was the A.B. catch.
Yeah, the A.B. catch.
Broad strokes after the game. One, it's a huge, huge, huge bummer because this entire season was about coming off of what happened in Foxborough.
Right.
In the title game, 51 yeah. weeks prior. So it was all a build to, we got to get Patriots Steelers. And I kept telling everybody, when everybody writes it in the pen that yeah. that's the title game, there's no way it's going to happen.
Well,
one of those two was going to lose, Patriots
the other
Steelers.
Thing, and I have to say this, after the game, I got a chance to see Le'Veon, AB. They were great. I mean, it was phenomenal. Then I was in the Jaguars locker room, hung out with those guys. You could tell, like, Pittsburgh felt like they let something go that they had. Right.
That's right.
They felt like they mm-hmm. had this one. But my questions are now is someone told me from that Jaguars game, they won, I want to say out of the 13 wins Pittsburgh had, three of those were against playoff teams.
Well, I mean,
that's tough because when you have the Jags who have played multiple playoff teams, you know, I don't know. I just felt like, you know, they didn't really, the back half of that schedule was pretty simple for them. They had one tough game, which was New England.
They had that. Well, I mean, listen, the Ravens are always.
They're always going to play you tough, but they weren't a playoff team because they lost to Cincinnati.
But the Ravens aren't a playoff team specifically because Pittsburgh beat them twice. So that the Ravens would have been a playoff
team.
They're
not a playoff team because they lost to Cincinnati on 4th and 12. That's why.
Also true. Also true. Now, Maurice. So I'm interested in what's going on game day.
You're
with those guys in the locker room before.
After the game, I was with them.
Okay. But
you want to go to game?
My broad strokes. I do want to hear about the impact of Mike Mitchell before the game. But okay. But I just want to say from where this Steelers fan sits. One, I can't, you know, as compared to the AFC title game last year up in Foxborough, there's not a visceral memory from that game that makes me think, I can't believe that happened and we still didn't win the game. There are spectacular touchdowns spread throughout that game on Sunday against the Jaguars, and they mean nothing. You can just flush them down history's toilet because they mean nothing. They're all moot, and that makes me crazy. One, and two, this all-time, potentially all-time offense with Hall of Famer Roethlisberger, the league's best wide receiver, and the league's best running back, may never get to a Super Bowl. We don't know what's going to be with 26. No, you can say, they're definitely going to franchise him. They're definitely going to hold on to him. Well, 26 is threatened to retire. I don't know if this thing gets sideways there. Well, I don't even know that Roethlisberger doesn't emerge 2 weeks from now and say, you know what, I've thought about it. I am going to retire now. We don't know any of those, and that will be the story of this generation's team. And it also bugs me that coming out of the game, that Cam Hayward and Vince Williams said, well, a lot of the what the Jags did was owed to lack of gap discipline, a lot of lack of trust in their teammates out there defensively. That was verbatim what they said a year ago coming out of New England. A year, 51 weeks, and you changed – the coaches changed absolutely nothing. I know Pittsburgh fans are wringing their hands and saying, fire Tomlin, fire Keith Butler, fire Todd Haley, and I'm usually not one who says, yeah, fire these guys. I don't think Tomlin's going to go. I don't think there's any chance Tomlin's going to go. I mean, he's won double-digit games 4 years in a row.
Don't be that guy.
But I do think that there is that they do need some sort of a shakeup, because if they didn't progress at all defensively, if they aren't more disciplined in terms of scheme,
but remember,
then you do need to make a change somewhere.
This is not a defensive team anymore. This is what you have to remember.
They have to be.
In the league, you only can make one side of the ball really good.
Agreed.
In this league with the salary cap and where we are. So you have all your money on the offensive side. Now, you have a lot of young and high-round picks on the defensive side, and you're supposed to develop those guys, and hopefully they get better. But all the proven guys are on offense, so your defense is going to suffer regardless.
I kind of agree, but Jay-Z going out was a massive loss.
That was the same thing with the Colts back in the day when they were paying all those guys on offense, Reggie Wayne.
I know.
And then the defensive, they had two guys they were paying, and they're expected to stop like that. It's hard to do that. I think you only can have, like, so for the Jacksonville, guess where all our money is? Defensively. I mean, they got almost $150 million on the defensive side, and then offensive side, it's all picks.
And I want to talk about that and how that may impact what the Browns do in the draft with
And that's the thing. I think Bucky was on – Bucky Brooks, make sure you guys follow him on Twitter. I think it's at Bucky Brooks or something like that. He does some great insight. And a lot of the insight is things that we've talked about, you know, when those things pop up. This is a team game. And I hate when people say, well, you need this guy, you need that guy. No, you need to put pieces out there first. You need to have a lot of talent out there first and then go. If you look at what happened with Green Bay when Aaron Rodgers went down, there is no talent on that
roster. They got exposed. That Ted Thompson's departure from that spot is exactly – we called that.
Yeah.
In the weeks following Rodgers' injury, yes. Yeah, they got, Thompson and McCarthy got exposed. You cannot just remove – I know the quarterback's the most important thing, but same thing I would say back – people – it feels like a vague excuse from the Steelers that, well, once Shazier went out, that defense was different. Yeah, but you know that injuries are going to happen, and you can't just completely crumble. I know Earl Thomas a year ago, things went south on them.
And guess what? They're firing everybody
in
Seattle.
But the one team that is impervious to that is these New England Patriots. I don't understand what.
No, it's not.
They kind of are. They lost. They didn't. They won the Super Bowl without Gronk last year. Now they don't have Dante Hightower out there.
Edelman, and Gronk are the two pieces that make that offense go. When you don't have one, which we saw in Miami, when they didn't have either one, the Dolphins, who have beaten anyone, they were struggling up and down, put a whooping on the Patriots. So the key is you have to have one, either Edelman or you have to have Gronk. And those two guys are the ones that make this thing go. Because if you remember in the Super Bowl, Edelman's the one that made all the crucial catches to get them, you know, that big, the bounce up one. He's the one doing the blocking and all those things. And Gronk's the same way. I think you have to have – the quarterback, yes, is obviously the most important piece because he touches the ball every play. But you have to have someone that he can always go to in crunch time.
I want to dig in on this a little bit more, but let's go back to Heinz Field on Sunday. And I do want to talk about, obviously, with the Wolf arriving soon.
We're not worried about that.
We'll get in on the Eagles. We'll get in. The Patriots basically destroyed the
– We're not even worried about it. Let's focus on Heinz Field.
All right. I'm just saying. I don't want anybody to think that that's the only thing we're going to be talking about.
That's the only game that matters.
All right. Now, listen. At 28-7
– we got to start at the very beginning, Sheck.
You're the one who jumped to 21-0.
Let's talk. Let's go all the way back to 7 o'clock in the morning when I get there.
Okay, tell me about it. You wake up. How do you feel?
So I wake up.
You're lucky to be sitting on the banks of the Three Rivers. It's already a start to a great
stayed day. At the Renaissance Hotel off 6th Street. Phenomenal.
That's where
hotel.
I was a month ago when it was
one of the great. People were great. It was a Steelers. They had Steelers country. My boys were all decked out in our Jag stuff. And
are people saying to you, hey, Maurice Jones-Drew, glad to have you here. Sorry, we're going to have to send you home sad.
That's exactly what they were saying. It was amazing how nice they were. It was nice. I mean, probably because my kids were there, but it was
great. People don't say mean. People aren't mean.
No. So we get there, and we're getting prepared for our first hit, and I have my boys in the car, and the driver who was driving Amber, Theo Harris, back to he stayed the whole time. Because
was it Bubby Brister?
No.
No, he doesn't. I don't know how he makes his way at this point.
I don't know.
Okay.
But he was so nice. He was like, I'll stay the whole time so your kids can stay in the car.
Ah, see?
I said, oh, my God, these people are great.
Like, yins go on. I got your kids for you.
They all talk like that, too. It was amazing.
make it up.
No, you didn't. So we're doing our hits, and there's some, you know, there was a Jags fan who got there. We got there at 7. He got there at 7:02. Shows up in his Telvin Smith jersey, surrounded by all these Pittsburgh Steelers fans. So they come out, and we're having a good time. So finally the sun comes out, and it starts to warm up. And I think we might have been doing our third or fourth hit. And my boys come out. We're, you know, having a snowball fight, and my youngest one throws a mean slider, and he caught Amber in the face. Right. So I was like, "Oh!" I was like, "Hey, like you can't do that." He was like, "Dad, she's throwing snowballs at me." I was like, "You know what? I respect it.
I respect it too for her mean spirited words about the great city of Pittsburgh. She's a Baltimore advocate.
She should be. It was freezing. And she helped us out, too, like, because I had to get my kids snow pants, and it was just crazy.
Oh, she's a mother of three.
She knows how it is when it's cold. So she did a great job helping. But then it was a point in time where the Pittsburgh Steelers fans started coming in droves. Like, it was just, like, people among people wearing all this Pittsburgh stuff. And my oldest son is a diehard Jags fan. Now, he was born in 2008 after we won. So he's never seen the Jags in the playoffs ever since. So he was like, Dad, I'm so frustrated right now. He goes, I just want to throw a snowball at a Pittsburgh Steelers fan. And I was like, son, you know, your old man, I can get down with the get down if I have to, but I just choose not to anymore. Like, I just want to, you know, be peaceful. He goes, but Dad, they're talking trash about the Jaguars. I got to do it. So there was a security guy there, and I was like, well, you could throw a snowball at him. He's cool. So he chucks one, poof, hits the guy. And so they're going back and forth, and we're doing our hit. And you can see in the back of the hit, the kids are diving and stuff. Well, I guess one fan, like, started talking trash to my kids.
That's not going to turn out
and
well.
And so my youngest one, like, has no filter. He doesn't care. Picked up the best snowball he could and hit the guy right in the teeth. Like, it just broke all over his face. And then they just started chucking snowballs. And it was cool because and I get it. Like, you see these random kids throwing snowballs at you. But people were like, they were it was fun. They had a good time. So, that was the gist of the story, is that they can laugh and joke with the kids when they're throwing snowballs at them, which was fun.
I'm glad ultimately. I was sad I wasn't making the trip. But obviously, in hindsight, I'm glad I wasn't there.
Yeah, you didn't want to be there.
It for the fun. Shame.
It was I told our kids, I was like, hey, put your feet on their couch. This is our second home. Have a good time. This is what we do here. We come in here and we do what we want.
So Mike Mitchell, all right, we're going through it chronologically here. We'll jump to the second half in a second. But Mike Mitchell, before the game, goes and stands outside the Jags locker room and is yelling, you're going to learn my name? Is that the story, Spaghetti? Is that what was specifically going on there?
I don't know. I didn't hear that. We were working.
Oh, you have no idea about that?
No idea about that.
Oh, yeah. Mike Mitchell was yelling outside the Jags locker room and telling
– It doesn't surprise me.
Well, like, the Jags, after the game, were talking about the fact that they did not like that. Did not appreciate that.
That's him, though.
David DeCastro has since come out and said –
because it's not smart. Like, dude, they stomped you the last time you played.
I know, but he also, yes, he got emasculated by Leonard Fournette, which we talked about, and Mike Mitchell directly called me out on
Twitter.
Tell him
to call me out on Twitter.
He called me and said, I'm dumb for saying that. I said, well, you did get owned by Leonard Fournette there. What do you want me to tell you
about
that?
And then T.J. Yeldon got a piece of you. I just think in these type of situations, it's already so much. Like, it's hard to, like, push people over the edge. All right, you already said what you said in the media, and that's fine. Like, that was whatever. But to stand outside someone's locker room and yell, you're going to know my name, like, come on, bro. Then stop it. Right? Like, be happy you're on a team that wins consistently. You were in Oakland. You were in Carolina at one point. They both let you move on. And you got with Pittsburgh. Be happy.
There's a lot of – on the banks of the Three Rivers, my spies tell me that there are a lot of people calling for Mike Mitchell's head.
I mean, you can –
there's blame to go around.
I think you can blame everybody, but when you put yourself out there like that – and I get it as a player. You want to be on the forefront because you're aggressive. Things happen when you're on the forefront, good and bad things. But the good things turn into great things. The bad things turn into worse things. So – You're going to play that game. Like, well, if we win, I'm doing all this. People are going to talk about me in the media. Like, yeah, I went out there before the game and I was saying this and that. I get it. I just think that in this time over, like, he was the one that said that thing, like, well, if we play New England here and there, it doesn't matter. We're going to win. Like, doing stuff like that that's overlooking an NFL team that's beaten you beforehand. And I've always questioned, like, what made people think that they were going to beat them again? There was nothing Pittsburgh did all year. Because they didn't play a defense like that all year.
What did we talk about last week? One thing I will not wear is the idea that Dave, I don't know what anybody else
thought. No, it's not you.
Dave definitely said over and over, this Jags team, the reason that Roethlisberger was crummy in the first game was not that Roethlisberger disrespected the Jags. It's that the Jags have a dominant defense and Roethlisberger is a gambler. He likes to press the ball. He doesn't like checkdowns. He likes to sling it.
Right.
And he slung it, and he got that day, and that defense is dominant, and it wasn't going anywhere. And you can see that this was going to be a dangerous spot.
This was the thing that people didn't talk about before the game, and I said it on Sunday. The Jaguars are a better offense versus a 3-4 defense. If you look at all their big points, the Houston Texans, the Colts, these are 3-4 defenses. This is because their offensive line – they're big maulers, so they can't move with the quicker Buffalo Bills type defense or the defenses that are, you know, or that shoot gaps. They can't. They don't. If you're going to stand there and let them push you around, yeah, they'll do that. They'll do that all day. They don't care. And so in that situation, it just was a better fit. It's the best fit for the Jacksonville Jaguars offense to go against a 3-4 defense. Well, what does Pittsburgh run? 3-4 defense. Mm-hmm. And you saw the running plays were like, it was crazy. Like, he was running through gaping holes and that's what fits them. But I just think, like, again, when we were sitting there, like, first of all, the atmosphere was phenomenal. It was great.
For a while. But I will say, so Martavis Bryant, so it's 28-7, things look dire, and you felt like you can't go into the locker room down 3 touchdowns. But then 7 throws a great ball.
This is my thing. If that's what you guys are going to – and I said this before you guys
– all right.
If you're going to live like that, hoping that you can throw bombs – at the end of the halves, then we'll give you. That's fine. Take it. Because at the end of the day, you're throwing Hail Marys up to hoping that they catch one. If you catch it, oh, okay. I mean, it happens.
I know. Well, that, you know, from, again, the Steelers fans lament, or at least what is confusing right now is how much of this when you see an offense that when pressed and throughout the season, you saw big rallies. You saw it even against New England in the big spot with Jesse James, the overturn and all that. But what led to that opportunity was another big play in a critical spot. They've been doing it all year long. And yet it feels – I'm with you because this – with the pieces that they have, including a high-end offensive line, and side note, Steelers fans should be much more concerned about losing Mike Munchak than anything else on that coaching staff.
Where's he going?
Well, he's getting a second interview with Arizona.
That's what I thought.
The
there's rumors. Yeah, there's rumors.
I mean, that would be a major loss if they lose him. However, when you're watching that game, how much is it do you just attribute to that they have some all-world talent on that team that overcomes bad coaching? And because, to your point, yes, they're just, you know, they're taking low percentage shots. They're playing big risk offense and doing that. Whereas it seems to me like even against the Jags, they should be able to just overwhelm anybody they play. That with the pieces that they have on offense, it should not be, you know, oh, they're having a hard time getting going here today. It should always be when they want to score. You look at the Patriots. They hang 35 on the Titans. The Steelers should just be able to go and,
right,
based on what they have offensively, should just be able to annihilate you.
Well, I think the biggest thing is,
and they don't,
when you take those long shots downfield, if you go against pass rushers like you saw, they're going to get to the quarterback eventually. And that's what happens. And so when you're willing to hold on to the ball that long, to take the ball, take shots down the field, you're allowing the pass rush to get closer to you. And that's been Big Ben's whole career. Remember, he's a guy I remember watching when I was playing, like him shrugging guys off him, running downfield, chucking the ball deep, which we saw him do to Antonio Brown for a touchdown. If that's, again, like I'm saying, if that's what you're going to – you got to live and die with that.
Well, they come out of the second half. It gets them the luxury at 28-14, the big play to end the half. I figured in the second half it was going to be all about 26. That's what I was saying.
It should have been like that from the very beginning.
Right, but I said, you know what? They're going to have – seven's going to have the discipline. Even after now throwing those two long balls for touchdowns, he's going to have the discipline to continue to just check down and find 26 and let 26 make hay. And they tried that, and then you're reminded – boy, those linebackers are fast.
They can run.
Jacksonville, and so you can't really do that. And he really did wind up in a spot at 28-21. I mean, you can say whatever you want. You have to concede bad trainer for a boxer or whatever. But if George Foreman's got that haymaker that he can slug you with once, that's how it started to feel like, all right, this is not good the way the Steelers are playing, but they still might end up stealing this game because of seven and Antonio
Brown. We were watching the game. It was me and my two boys, and then my agent was there, who's Le'Veon Bell's agent, Telvin Smith, and Yannick Ngakoue. So the one thing he says is, if you look at their body language, look at Pittsburgh's body language when they're down 21-0. No one was yelling, pouting. They were just like, all right, we've been here before. Like, we can make it happen. And that was scary. But the key was the Jags had a 2-touchdown lead going into half. And regardless of what happened, they were going to run the ball.
All right, that's fine. But wait, before we go on, Emma VP, are you saying that you want me to hurry this along here? Are you bored with our discussion?
No, I'm not bored with it. I'm a big Steeler fan, but we just had a lot of other stuff to
all
get
right,
to.
But are you bored?
I'm not bored.
More important, are we doing too deep a dive on this game for the people?
Perhaps.
Okay, look, at the end of the day, it wasn't good enough. All right, on to the next one. Pittsburgh wasn't good enough.
I want to talk about one more thing.
Go ahead.
With this game, because that is what everybody in Pittsburgh is talking about. Todd Haley and or Ben Roethlisberger, first of all, do you think on both those fourth and short situations on the Jag side of the field, the Steelers go for it? Who ultimately is making that play call? Is Seven checking out of stuff that Haley has called?
I didn't see...
Or is that Haley?
That's normally the play call. You run the play call.
So he didn't check out of either one of those things.
I don't remember exactly what the play call was. Like what happened? To be honest, those were mere. They were just kind of put all together at that point.
Well, they run a toss the first one.
That was a play call.
The second time they run it 28-21, and it's perhaps the decisive play of the second half is they run play action and throw it to Juju. And by the way, Bouye blatantly holds Juju.
They hold every time.
All right.
Everybody holds.
All right. But this was egregious and should have been flagged. But all right.
Were they tangled up the whole time?
Juju had a step on him coming over the middle, and Bouye just dragged him, just blatantly dragged him before the ball got there.
I just saw a great defensive play. At the end of the day, the first play they thought they can get on the edge of him and kind of get Le'Veon running on a corner, which is what you want, and it didn't happen. The defense flowed in, and they were able to get a tackle for a loss. And then the second one, you run a play-action fake because you just ran the toss play on the first one, thinking that you're going to get him to bite up, and then you'll be able to dump the ball over the middle. And even if he grabbed or not, at the end, they don't normally call penalties on fourth and one unless you're playing in New England. So just
all
one
right.
of things.
Let's leave it here. One, is Mike Tomlin a great coach, a good coach, mediocre coach who succeeds with high-end talent?
He's a great coach.
Great coach.
I mean, what was his worst record is 8-8. I was in the stadium when they were like, Tomlin has to go. Well, who are you going to hire then?
That's exactly.
Who's the next guy?
Yeah, right. Exactly. Who's it exactly you think you're going to get to make that's going to do better? Now, I will field questions about even Todd Haley, but it is, like I say, it's hard to say because the offense is productive and they do make big plays in big moments.
Right.
It just feels like it doesn't have to be this hard. They shouldn't have to be clever. They should just be able to steamroll you.
It's the playoffs, and you're playing the top defense in the league. It was the same way in the Vikings.
45-42 is such a weird, wonky
score. It was 45-35. Check, and then they threw a touchdown with no time left on the clock.
Stop
all that. It was 45.
And by the way, the onside kick was an atrocious decision.
Well, he had to do that.
He did not have to do
check,
that.
He had to because, okay, let's say.
You guys went 3 and out as it was. Why couldn't that happen on that side of the field?
Jacksonville had went, what did they do? They had went down the field a bunch of times, 6-minute drives, 7-minute. So if you kick it down the field and you can't stop them, the game's over. So you have to go. You have to.
But then they did stop them.
Yeah, but we don't know if they would have stopped them if it was backed up.
How different would that have been? The play calls would have been the same.
You don't know. You don't know if they'd have been the same.
Maybe they would have rolled the dice and done some play action in that spot, but I doubt it. And I don't think that they.
You don't know that.
Well, they were aggressive. They were surprisingly aggressive in some spots where those Jags. But now we'll never know. I do think it was a mistake to onside kick it there. To reduce it to, I have so little faith in our defense in this
he
spot.
Scored 42 points. Where do you feel like, okay, there's 42 points aboard, our defense is fine?
I agree. I didn't think it was fine.
I mean, like,
but what Tomlin is saying, he's boiling it down to is
I'm going to try to get my offensive ball back.
Absolute fluke of that the ball's going to bounce off the guy and we're going to recover it.
It's happened before.
I guess it did happen in the title game up in Seattle. Let's talk about some of the NFC action with a guy who is no stranger to it. In fact, was in that 2014 NFC title game up in Seattle against Aaron Rodgers and the Packers, one of our very favorites in all-time DDFP history. Here he comes, everybody, into Studio 66. And then on the other side, more NFC glory to talk about with our pal the Wolf and her Eagles. But here he is, everybody, number 56, Cliff Averill.
That's Dave Damashek.
All right, here we go. He has made the Digital Wall of Fame for past deeds, for flapping his gums here in Studio 66. Back once again, one of our very favorites to ever shadow our door here. It's Cliff Averill. What's happening, fella?
Yay.
Yeah, there you go.
Thanks to the studio. Everything's going well, man. I can't complain. Just recovering from surgery.
Yeah.
And just taking it day by day.
All right. I want to talk about you, your future. No one less than the head coach of the Seattle Seahawks is weighing in on your pro football playing future.
I didn't appreciate that either, Coach Carroll.
Is that true? How does that hit you? Did you know that was coming?
No, I had no clue. Everybody started blowing me up like, oh, is it done? Are you over with? I'm like, what are y'all talking about? Oh, Coach Carroll came out with a statement. I read the statement. I'm like, come on, Coach Carroll. I thought we don't discuss injuries.
Did you call him immediately and say, what gives, man?
I did not, but I need to. I need to shoot him a text message like, come on, Coach. Like, what are we doing here?
When you get serious with him, do you call him Peter? I bet that would resonate more with him. Peter, what is this about?
Nah, I call him Pete, though. Definitely Pete. Hey, Pete, what's up, man? Like, what's going on?
All right, listen. It's nice to laugh. It feels good for me to laugh.
Me and you both.
I'm still emotionally overwrought. I'm feeling down in the dumps. My Pittsburgh Steelers took a tough loss on Sunday. Saints fans obviously licking their wounds today as well.
Yes, yes.
You have been. I don't want to pick at the scab, but I feel like it's now you're probably as healed as you're going to get from Super Bowl 49, aka arguably the most painful Super Bowl loss ever. Let's have a little support group. How do you get by this? How do you get by this in the short term if you're a fan or you're a player? Legitimately, what do you say to guys? Because, you know, in 49, and we've talked about it on this show before, Cliff Averill doesn't go out of that game in the second half. I suspect the Seattle Seahawks are your Super Bowl champ a few years ago.
Back to back, too.
Right. And you never get another bite at that apple. I'm not trying to rub salt in the wound. I'm trying to have a support group. So how do you move forward and let go of what's in the immediate rearview mirror?
You have no choice. I mean, it's been, what, 2 years now? 3 years now? Has it been 3 years now? So you kind of have to move on. It's tough. I think, you know, from emotionally, you know, it's kind of draining through that following year of thinking like, man, we could have been back-to-back champs. But instead, you know, we're stuck here trying to make it to the playoffs again and all these different things. So I think for us it was just all about, you know, just trying to put it behind you. The core guys understanding that, hey, it's over and done with. Now let's try to win another one. and we haven't gotten there yet. So it's a continue, it's a battle. We got to continue to keep battling, continue to keep getting better. I don't think it's over with as far as for the Seahawks and the defense and what we've been able to do for the last 5 years.
I get it. But let's try. You know, you remember the rule. No jive. That's the rule here in 66. At the very least, the Seahawks philosophically have had to. They've been forced into a situation where the team structure has had to evolve. I mean, it was inevitable with large contracts and everything else, but obviously they've also shifted more into an offensive mindset. You see Russell running around, making more plays with the arm. And I know injuries had a lot to do with that, but you believe it's not done for the Seahawks. What needs to happen in 2018 then to get back to the top of the mountain?
Well, I do think there's going to be some changes. That's for sure. I think there's going to be some, I mean, obviously with the coaching changes and things like that, but I think there's going to be some changes on defense as well. I feel like they could possibly go a little bit younger and bring in more young players along. But I think they have to keep a core group of leaders, though. Like, you can't just wipe out and, you know, take all these great players away and not have anybody to lead these young guys, the guys that have actually been to the promised land, as they would say. But I think they're definitely going to start over. Well, I don't want to say start over completely, but it's going to be some new faces on that defense and on offense. But the scheme, the culture, I think all that will bring those guys to where they want to go in the future.
As far as keeping it real goes, all of a sudden, I mean, the Seahawks had a stranglehold on the NFC West in the same fashion that you might say the Patriots had in the AFC East for a while. But now all of a sudden,
you got some competition.
All right, the Cardinals have regressed a little bit. In the meantime, here are the Rams, and now here come the Niners too, right?
Man, it's crazy. We talk about this. We're like, all in 1 year, the Rams were able to turn this thing around.
Yeah,
And have a legit team, and they have a chance to be good for some time because they have a lot of young players. But then you got the 49ers also, who have a lot of young players that are playing pretty good, and then they got this quarterback comes out of nowhere for them and wins what, 5, 6, 7 straight games or something crazy like that. So the competition is real in the NFC West, and the Seahawks are going to have to bring it if they want to be at the top of that.
Yeah, it really kind of feels that way. Now, a team that in 2017, now in 2018, that I've kind of compared – your defense too is these Jacksonville Jaguars, because they're not just the thing I've said over and over and over again this season is they're not merely great on defense. Mm-hmm. They are, in the same way the Seahawks were a few years ago, just generationally dominant. Could just take the oxygen away from the
take over the game.
But the difference is that whereas I feel like a lot of your mates on the Seahawks had a chip on their shoulder because they weren't drafted or they were low round picks, these guys seem to have a swagger that's like, wait, everybody doesn't know we're the best? I mean, look, we're all a bunch of first round studs. Look at us. Why aren't we the best team, right?
Yeah, no. I mean, but confidence plays a big part in how well you're going to be too. I mean, those guys are confident, you know, from Jalen Ramsey to Calais to, you know, what's my man's name? Malik Jackson. All these guys are confident, but they're also having fun. I was watching, I want to say last week's game, and I'm like, man, they remind me of who we used to be. You know, they're out there having fun. They're bullying people. They're getting after the quarterback. Their DBs are playing lights out. I mean, all overall as a defense, from D line linebacker to their DBs, all those guys are pretty good players, and they all feed off of each other. You see them, you know, they get a sack. The DBs are running and giving a high five. They understand that they need everybody to make this successful, and they're having a great time doing it.
I think, though, that, yes, as dominant that, you know, it is still in the 21st century, and we still are going to have out of the NFC, it's either going to be Foles or Keenum. And you might see Blake Bortles if he can knock off the GOAT on the AFC side. What happened to our quarterback league? And I still think even here in January of 2018, it's very hard, no matter how good you are in defense. You can't just hide the QB.
Nope.
You can't go into the game and just say, like, let's just never it's not Big 8 1985.
But
you have to make a play.
They've been able to do that, though. Jacksonville's been able to do that in a sense. I mean, I think they run the ball the most out of any other team. So that's the way of hiding the quarterback.
But can Blake make enough plays in Foxborough get by that team?
I mean, that's what he's been doing all season, honestly. The defense gives them enough chances. You know, they get turnovers and all these – give them extra possessions. And all you got to do is manage the game, bro. Manage the game, give the ball to the running back, give it to Fournette, let him do what he does, and you know, hopefully get the time possession as well on the ball. And I think they have a chance. I really do.
You know what? I'm remiss legitimately. This is one of the most thoughtful guys in pro football. The NFL's lousy with him, but Cliff Avril's one of the best guys building houses and the great work he does.
We
didn't even have time to get into the whole Haiti thing. What do people care what I think on this subject anyway? But Cliff Avril, man to listen to about football and beyond. Thanks for your great work there. We didn't even get to talk about Big Ten football and all that. and the terrible city, the terrible football town of West Lafayette. But you still at least have the Boilermakers, the best mascot.
I love the Boilermakers. Although we're not as good as we'd like to be. No. I love my Boilermakers.
Did get the bucket from my Hoosiers.
We did. Hey, that's what I'm talking about. The bucket's back in West Lafayette, and hopefully we can keep it there.
All right, let's not trash talk her. That 56, I have the power to take it down.
No. Don't take it down.
There he is, everybody, the great Cliff Avril. We look forward to seeing you playing out on the field no matter what Peter Carroll has to say about it.
Peter Carroll.
In 2018. Cliff Avril, everybody.
Thanks for having me.
Dave. Ah, there he is, Cliff Avril. We love him even though he's a Boilermaker. Maurice, do you know about Just for Men? Your hair is not graying in the least.
No, not at all.
You look good.
Thank you.
I've got some graying beard. Do you think it's time that I address that?
Yeah.
I don't know.
But they make because you have a reddish tint to your beard.
I do?
Yeah, it's like an orange-red tint in the light.
A reddish tint. I never have heard that before. Well, support for today's show comes from an innovative shampoo. Yeah. We're introducing Control GX, the first gray-reducing shampoo from Just for Men, Maurice. Just for Men helps men look their best. You already know that. We celebrate who they are. Maybe they could do – I wonder if Just for Men could do something and wash that Jaguars helmet so it only has one color to it, because what they look like is grotesque.
Pittsburgh may want to switch that Jaguars helmet because they can't beat it.
Well, you know what? This season, I can't argue with you, but I will say this. The Jags, a relentless defense. Just for Men, relentlessly innovative in delivering smart hair care technology that works for you, making it radically easy to get the natural look you want. And guess what, Maurice? 25% off.
Ooh.
Control GX using the code DAVE, D-A-V-E is how you spell it. At controlgx.com, that's code DAVE to get 25% off Control GX at controlgx.com. Head over there right now, why don't you, Maurice? Get ahead of it before...
I'm going to get it before it's all...
What's happened to me happens to you. I want you to be ahead of the curve there.
You know what? I ain't ever stressed. That's where gray comes from, stress.
All right, let's talk about this.
Gray.
All right, let's do this.
Out on Sunday.
You've celebrated your victory, Maurice.
It's not over. I'm going to celebrate all week.
All right, we'll talk about whether or not that's going to come to pass or not. But first, let's have another little celebration here because another member of our Tuesday DDFP is here to celebrate all the way from the city of brotherly love, NFC title game participant. It is the Wolf!
A Philly girl from the very start. You know Rocky Balboa in the museum.
That's enough. Why are there champagnes in here?
Hey,
too many champagne.
How do we get it started? There we go.
I don't like this. This I don't care for.
What is that, Chuck?
Empty-handed. I get no champagne.
That's right. Well, your Steelers lost.
I heard about that.
This is the winner's side of things.
Make
over
sure
here.
You open that right because I don't want to pop it in.
Look at the Wolf. She's in full Philly girl regalia today.
All right.
She's dressed like Pinky Tuscadero today. Look at her.
Oh, it's Fonzie's just a twist
girlfriend.
Off.
Okay, good. I wasn't making sure. Hey, cheers.
Hey, cheers.
To the winners.
They're drinking champagne in Studio 66 while I sit here with my belly full of pain and sorrow.
I'm sorry. MJD and I were texting. I told him I was going to bring champagne in.
Is that true?
She did.
Yep.
disrespectful.
It's a celebration in here.
I guess so. The Wolf, let's talk about it. How are you? You're over the moon, eh?
I am great. Yes.
Yes. It was
You're barking like a dog. The Wolf. Forget the Wolf. It's the dog
That's
now.
That's right.
Underdog. Getting a dog mask.
Uh-huh. I have to.
Are they underdogs again?
I feel like they probably will be. Hmm. I don't know.
That's a good question. I don't know about that, but the Wolf,
I think
tell
they,
us
you
about
know what?
It
from Honestly,
where you didn't get to the stadium, did you?
No, I had to fly back, but I'm going this week. I'm so excited. I'm so excited. I'm going to be outside with Steve Smith doing some hits for Game Day Morning, the West Coast show, after we're done the East Coast show, and then I'm going to go head inside for the game.
Excellent.
I can't wait.
Good for you. I will say again what I've already said before. I just wish it were I know it'll be exciting, but I wish it were in Minnesota. The stakes are even higher. If you're playing in the stadium
yeah.
that's about to host the Super Bowl, I mean, that just would add to the electricity.
You
but
know what right. I hate? The what? Fact that even if the Vikings do get to the Super Bowl, they're not going to be able to use the horn.
Why?
Because the NFC the NFC team is the road team too.
Here's the real question: do you?
I'm gonna use it anyways. Fine.
Don't you think it's ridiculous? I think it's ridiculous.
Find me.
If you're well, Maurice, you and your Jags pals are all mixers. That's what you like mixing it up.
Oh yeah, we don't care.
Like, so what cool. are you yeah. gonna? What if you win and the Vikings win?
Do well,
you
think that's not gonna happen. The Vikings.
Do you think the
win.
Jags claim the locker room? The
no
Vikings
question.
Locker room, because
yes.
they're the home team.
Yes.
They say go to the visitors' locker room, Vikings, even though all your stuff's here.
That is a great point,
imagine the photographs you could send around from, like, hey, look at this, Case Keenum. I'm in your locker.
That would be – and you know that they would. That's one of my favorite things about this Jags team.
This is phenomenal, Kyle.
Right?
It tastes better after a victory.
I think it's
it could be a little colder.
Champagne
okay.
drinkers
I
in
chilled
my
it overnight, and I didn't want to forget it, so I put my car keys in the refrigerator with it.
Oh, she was so – you know, it's one thing.
Shame on both of you.
You know what? And Colleen, I have to say this.
What? Shame on both
what?
Of you
Tell
for
me.
Acting
I put,
like
I, suck.
Act like you've been there
I really felt like the Eagles – this was a game the Eagles – weren't going to win. But there was a stat that came out, and it scared me, and I was like, why did I pick him? Matt Ryan is 1-4.
Awful in Philadelphia.
He's awful in Philadelphia.
Mm-hmm. And the Eagles are amazing in Philadelphia. Like, their home
Unless
field.
They play the Cowboys.
Well, I mean, look, that
Raiders.
Game at the end of the year
the
was
Raiders.
Awful. But they've been really, really good
yeah.
at home this year. And that was one of the things going into the game that I was looking at, too. But I was really worried about that Falcons defense because they've been playing so fast.
And they were doing well. I mean, really, the game changed when the ball kicked off the guy's shin.
Yeah, that's like, Keanu Neal.
Yeah. Neal let the ball go.
Can you imagine that the game legitimately swung on that one bizarro play?
Because they gave him a field goal.
I scoffed off the top of the game.
Collinsworth kind of was like, oh, immaculate reception too. And I said, all right, settle down. It's just the end of the first half. But then it did lead to points, and it did obviously impact
Change
the end
the
of the game.
Yeah, and then their only touchdown happened because Nick Foles threw himself on the fumble right yeah. there at the one. If that didn't happen, that could have been a turnover there, and then who knows what would have happened. So they got their only touchdown off of that play, and then they got a field goal off of the deflection from Keanu Neal's knee.
Well, we're very happy for you, the Wolf, and I hope it'll be a festive time.
You sound very
but
happy.
But is that better than the Viking Saints? Sheck.
That game.
You may not know this, Sheck, because you may not watch us on TV. But on power rankings, this is one of the reasons me and Colleen were texting, because Case Keenum proved me right.
All year.
Proved you right.
All year.
Proved me right.
MJD has been saying that Case Keenum is a better quarterback than Drew Brees.
This year. Just this year.
Yep.
And in the first half, it was true.
Yeah.
I mean, he looked phenomenal on Drew Brees.
And in the second half, Drew Brees looked better.
Lit it up in the second half.
But I said, Case Keenum is going to take the Vikings on a last second drive and win the game.
I can't believe you said that.
And I guaranteed it. I put the stamp on it.
Really? Did you call that one? Good for you, Maurice. You've been a seer all season long.
You're like Calais Campbell. Sure. Didn't he predict
Yeah, but his prediction was a little different. Like, I'm a little salty that the Jag kind of threw shade at me like that. I'm about to talk to their social media team.
Oh, no.
45-42.
Yeah,
that's
Calais. He goes, we can win 2-0
uh-huh.
or 45-42. I don't care.
Yeah.
And then they won 45-42, which is pretty awesome.
There's a guy in Philly on Twitter who predicted the score of the Eagles-Falcons game and exactly how it was going to happen. before it happened.
Oh, he's been there before.
Locastic, shout
all right.
out.
The Wolf, going, watching that Saints, what was your heart telling you? Watching the Saints and Vikings, what outcome were you rooting for in the last four, in the final quarter? Though?
I'm going to be completely transparent here. I'm flying back because I couldn't get my normal flight. I'm on a plane during the game, and we don't have TV on the plane.
That's ridiculous.
And I had already drained my computer battery down to nothing. It already died because I had TweetDeck up, and that's how I was just, like, living through the games. And so I'm, like, texting John. My dad's texting me updates. Everyone's texting me updates, and I'm texting you, MJD. And my phone starts dying, too, because I'm switching between Twitter, trying to refresh, and I'm switching between all my text messages and trying to see what the heck's happening. And I seriously could not keep up because of all of the lead changes. What, it was like four lead changes in 3 minutes? And so as soon as I got home, I had to watch the – I watched the whole game. Like, I sat down, even though I knew what was going to happen. And it was still
it was worth
crazy
it.
All right,
watching
you,
it over again.
Of course, Saints or Vikings, though, who do you think is the better matchup coming into Philly? Now you have what you have.
Well, that Vikings defense scares the living crap out of me. I'm so worried that they're going to eat Nick Foles alive. But I think that the Eagles' offensive line played really well in the game against the Falcons. And I think that the way that they had the game plan and the play calling was really great when they sort of adjusted things in the second half for Nick Foles. They didn't – I think he kind of calmed down a little bit, Nick Foles. They didn't put too much pressure on him. It was a lot of, like, RPOs,
yeah,
screen passes.
Yeah, they did a ton of RPOs.
And they kind of helped him out. And I think that helps his confidence. And hopefully they can just – because Minnesota's secondary, too, is amazing.
Can I ask you a question? So let's just say – let's just – this is not – if Minnesota plays in Minnesota, do the players stay at their house or do they stay in a hotel for that week?
Like, I don't know. That's right? I'm like, fascinated by that.
It's a week that they have to be, you know, because normally the team flies in. Hi, everybody's hi. And you stay in a hotel the whole time.
Who do you want, Maurice? You think the Jags are going to beat the Patriots, so who do you want waiting for you?
To me, it really doesn't matter. I would like it to be. It doesn't matter really because both teams have good defenses and then backup quarterbacks. So that it's what it'd be a defensive game, and then we'll kind of take the notion away that we were supposed to talk about, that you need this all-star quarterback to win a Super Bowl. I think that's over and done with now, with the way the quarterbacks are coming in.
Well, let's jump in on that. What do you think? All right, let's go there. I think that now you look at this Final Four. Now Carson Wentz, of course, got the Eagles to where they are. I don't think Nick Foles gets the Eagles to this same station, number one seed and all that. But nevertheless, just won against the reigning NFC champs. Did take care of business there, won a 60-minute game away from getting to a Super Bowl. On the other side, you have Case Keenum, who was more or less a low-grade punchline for a lot of people. And now you have Blake Bortles, who was a headline punchline for a lot of people.
That's so true.
And then you have the GOAT. Right. So does this mean that if you're the Cleveland Browns, let's say, with the first and fourth pick, do you maybe think about, hey, we could go with we could get some defensive studs, and with Myles Garrett, we can just dominate you. We don't need to go and get one of those QBs.
I think if you're Cleveland, you want to build a team because you've had no success. You've had zero success with quarterbacks, right? I mean, the jersey that has all the quarterbacks' names on it, best thing I've seen in a
while. That's awful.
But it's like, okay, we don't – you can go and get a quarterback and try that method again, or you have two top five picks. You can actually build, like, put this team and then drop a quarterback in there.
Right.
And I think that's what you want to do, and that's what the Jaguars have done. That's what the Vikings have done. I mean, literally, they've built their whole team – and then they're like, all right, now we're going to drop a quarterback in there. That was Sam Bradford. He goes down. Guess what? Case Keenum comes in, and you can keep that thing going.
Right.
And it's because the pieces – they're one of the most talented teams in the league is the Vikings. You have two wide receivers who are both – can have the ability to be number one wide receivers. You have a really good tight end, three running backs – right,
and nobody talks about them like they've talked about the Saints running backs all year. Nobody talks about their receivers.
They didn't put up the numbers like the Saints running backs.
Sure.
That's the one thing. But they were winning. The receivers, for some reason, don't get respect. I don't know why Adam Thielen doesn't get respect. Like, when the Rams played them in November, I told everyone in the Rams, okay, who are they going to try to stop? You only can try to stop one. Who are you going to try to stop? Oh, we'll let Thielen go. All right, okay, that's fine if that's what you want. And then guess what? He just tears you up.
Yeah, you don't want to do that.
Yeah, so who are you going to cover? So they have a great mix. And remember, Thielen's an undrafted guy, and Diggs is a fifth-round pick.
Mm-hmm.
right? So they're finding talent.
And you're doing it with Case Keenum.
And you're doing it with Case Keenum at the bottom.
Wait a second. MVP just said in my ear, we only have 10 minutes left. That's grim news. I don't care for that news.
In Dave time, it's probably like 15.
I would like to say about the Diggs play. I mean, that play that will live on for decades.
Forever.
Now. Yeah.
It's just so crazy to watch it.
It's up there with the Immaculate Reception, the Music City Miracle. I'm trying to think of the seminal last play close to last play of big time postseason games. The thing that struck me in the moment was, as I'm sitting there watching it, and it did take me legitimately a full half of football to get past what happened in Hines and start paying attention to this game, and I reluctantly did so. Mm-hmm. And so I watched this last thing, and I was feeling bad for Vikings fans. I had a couple of pals who are Vikings fans in the stadium, and so I was vaguely rooting for them to pull it out. And I thought, Brees did it again. All right, well, Drew Brees versus Brady, that'll make for a good Super Bowl. That was my legitimate thought. That's shake your head on, drink your champagne. What do you care what I think? I'm on the loser side.
Go ahead.
I'm telling you, I'm no jiving you. I'm telling you what I was feeling in the moment.
Things losers say. It's a new book.
I like it.
Out.
All right. I said, for the record, I still have 6 Lombardi trophies. I mean, your combined zero.
That's what Emma said, and I told her, if you stay in the past, you can never move forward.
All right. Now listen.
We live in the present.
When when Case Keenum throws that ball and you think, well, this isn't going to work out, and then you see Diggs jump up and grab it, my initial thought was, As he turns,
you're like,
around,
get out of bounds.
Step out of bounds. Oh. What are you doing? Know the situation. And then, what?
There's nobody there.
I think that most receivers would be conditioned in that situation to if you catch this ball, step out of bounds immediately. In that split second that he had.
He almost tripped, too.
Well, he felt
– because he's waiting to get hit.
Right.
He heals the guy behind him, so he's waiting for contact that he never gets.
Yeah.
So he loses his balance. But as he spins around, that he sort of felt like, I got to take it to the house here.
There's no one there. I mean, as soon as he puts his hand down, he looks up, and there's no one there. So he takes off running.
Where are the clocks when he lands?
There's no way he can see the clock.
I'm saying, if he had stepped out of bounds, would it have been – I think if he actually would have stepped out of bounds, it might have been double zeros, and he would have, and the game would have ended
over. Yeah.
Oh, my God. That.
And what if he had stepped out of bounds in that situation and the clock says double zeros and you see on the replay, there was no one in front of him.
Oh,
he could have just run the house.
It was Marcus Williams. And that's, I mean.
I feel bad for Marcus Williams. Everybody in the world feels sick for him.
The thing is, and a lot of it, there's a lot of stuff on Twitter about it because of the rules and you can't hit guys and those type of things. And I understand that. The issue is, though, when you have to understand the situation. You can't be aggressive in that situation. The way he broke on the ball, he broke in an aggressive manner, like, I'm going to go break this pass up, instead of breaking like, all right, let me just get in position to catch him when he catches the ball and then just hold him up for a couple seconds and then tackle him and then we're good.
We've talked about this a lot, and we just talked about it recently, in fact, Maurice, is that some defensive players close their eyes. Young guys
all the time.
Right.
Close their eyes at the point of impact,
and
you can get exposed doing that. And, in fact, you've called out guys for doing that.
Well, he did it. Well, this is the other thing.
Train yourself to keep your eyes open?
Some people have it. It's just you do it as kids. Like, you always look through, and it's hard because stuff is flying, but you have to be able to do it so you know what you're hitting. But with that, like, a lot of young players do it because a lot of guys, they especially DBs, they don't hit people face to face like linebackers. They always cut you or hit you when you're not looking. But in that situation, the one thing I can say about the Patriots that a lot of teams don't do, and I don't know if Sean Payton, those guys go through this, and he said they practice it, but every situation is different. Right. So the defense he was in was a great defense to keep them in bounds with like 14 seconds left. But you never practice that play with like 6 seconds left and saying, all right, what are we going to do as they try to go out of bounds?
I know. I think that's asking a lot of the DB to know to hold them up at the sideline because it'll spin. That's a lot on the kid.
But that's on the coach. The coaches have to be able to relay that to
them. Right.
Like, listen, hold them up. Don't let them go out of bounds and grab. Like, don't go for the big hit.
Yeah, if he just went for a regular tackle
he
would have been fine. But he went low instead.
And he got there early.
What a time the Wolf's going to have. It's excellent that you get to go to a title game.
Freaking out. I'm freaking
out. Maurice, you're going to Foxborough, right?
Yep.
I mean, you guys are both going to be at title games this Sunday. What a thing. I mean, no, these are memories that last a lifetime. Isaiah, the Eagles fans.
What?
Shaq's going to be at home.
Cheers to that.
Cheers.
I might make a road trip out of spite. I don't want to, but now I feel like I might do it. I might get in my car after the show and drive to Philly or Foxborough, and you don't know which one I'm showing up in. You don't know until I'm there.
Elliot Harrison and everyone else here besides –
in the same car together?
They're all going to be kicking it.
This is how you act, Maurice. This is unbecoming.
I'm sorry. It's only right when I –
You have to play the New England Patriots, and I want to say – before we begin, let's get to it.
We're still here.
We have to have a celebratory championship round edition, quick though it may be, of the Q&A.
It's time for the Q&A. Here we go.
What do you say? It's going to be
a great day.
Time for the Q&A.
Hey.
When I said it's going to be a great day, I didn't know what the future held.
No.
Now I know it's not a great day.
MJD actually is clairvoyant, I think.
I think.
You have been on a hot streak starting off.
It's Brandon Stark. It's the Brandon Stark in me.
Marie said way back before the season kickoff game, the Chiefs are going to go up to Foxborough and beat them.
Yep.
The football gods like the Patriots, apparently. That's beyond dispute at this point because they delivered the Tennessee Titans to them instead of the Chiefs, who could have beaten them. And instead, and the call in Heinz Field, if Jesse James gets a touchdown, it would have been the Jaguars last weekend doing that to the Patriots. Steelers could have walked over the Titans.
Let it out, Shaq. Let it out.
All right. That's how I feel. But I want to say something about – here's a big prediction. We're seeing all these coaching changes. Josh McDaniels going to the Colts, right?
Yeah,
it seems like that's done deal. We hear Matt Patricia's going to Detroit.
Uh-oh.
Now, we heard Pat Shurmur is going to the Giants, but that hasn't really actually come to –
But you know what's funny?
We don't know that one's done. We know McDaniels is going there.
Right.
But Pat Shurmur and Ben McAdoo run the exact same offense.
Huh.
The exact same. They do the exact same thing.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like a fit, and that leads me to this.
That's right. You're right. Yeah.
Exact same thing. That's right.
And by the way, Matt Patricia, people have chased after him in the last few years to no avail. Josh McDaniels, you know, all right, the debacle in Denver notwithstanding, a lot of NFL teams have been calling up Josh McDaniels the last few years, and yet you don't hear them seriously entertaining those offers. This time around, both those guys seem to be jumping at the chance to go from New England to a different situation. In the meantime, we've heard from Seth Wickersham. We talked to Willie McGinnis last week. Go back and listen to Willie. Willie with great stuff. We did a half an hour deep dive on Willie McGinnis, who surely knows what's going on up there with this controversy, all that stuff. It all leads me to this prediction. Maybe 60 more minutes, maybe 120 more minutes.
Uh-oh.
But that's going to be it for Bill Belichick in I think Belichick either retires, or if I had to guess right now, I think he's the next coach of the New York Football Giants.
What
do you think about that?
I heard there's smoke, there's fire. Some people have said that already, that he likes that Giants job and he wants to be a part of the Giants.
Really?
Well, I mean, he can basically reboot if part of the condition, which I assume Bill Belichick writes his own ticket. If he can say to the Giants, hey, I want Josh Rosen or I want Sam Darnold and I want to start anew here. And it seems like I feel like those guys are – I'm not saying being disloyal to Tom Brady or anyone else or to Robert Kraft or anything else.
Loyalty in this game.
I just think that they're taking their best opportunities and, you know
– it's a business decision.
Yeah. And no, there's no such thing as loyalty.
Or maybe, what about Nick Saban moves to New England?
Yeah.
But you know what? I don't think the college football is perfect for Nick Saban.
Yeah.
I kind of agree. If we're talking, let's talk.
Right.
He does at Alabama doesn't. It won't work in the league because you're paying me now.
Hey, Pat Shurmur. You know where runs the same offense as Ben McAdoo. You know where that would be an interesting fit? The Tennessee Titans. Go down there, Pat Shurmur. Ooh. That's a nice little fit for you there.
Great fit.
You'll go down there. You still get your gig, Matt Patricia. You take over the
they
Detroit
say Josh
line.
McDaniels. I thought, well, no, who's taking the Titans gig then?
We don't know yet.
Yeah, it's still open. Wait,
maybe Jeff
so
Fisher
I have a question
can go
here.
Back there.
Maybe.
How? Why hasn't the Jags defensive coordinator Todd Wash?
Todd Wash.
How come he hasn't gotten any?
Oh
any
yeah, and
attention?
Steve Wilkes can also go to Tennessee. Yeah,
he will. This is his first
New
year
England.
With a really like the defense has always been decent, but this is the first year that he's been really good. So
yeah.
I think next year will be his year where he gets an opportunity to go and interview because of what.
Okay.
By the way, one last thing about my prediction that you just heard there. I've heard from Patriots fans when I have floated the notion of this, people say you're desperate to see that happen as a Steelers fan. You want Belichick to go. You want Brady to retire. No, I don't. That's
you
my sorrow.
Them with them. Yeah.
That's my
yeah.
sorrow. Now I feel like we just missed an opportunity.
Well, this is the thing.
To see that happen.
Check,
now, if,
check you did.
If Belichick loses, if Belichick leaves, then that's it. That's a wrap on that. They never took
already,
them out.
They
never
a,
took that
no.
too
They already have a built-in excuse, though. Like, because I hear people all say it all the time. Well, Tom's 40. He's still playing.
Right.
It's like
right.
I remember we were playing and there was a female that played on the other team against us, in, not in high school but in elementary and youth football, and she got hit just like the boys. And my grandpa was like, hey, if they're on the field, you got to treat them the same way. And I think that's what Tom, yes, he is 40
That should
years
be
old,
life in general,
but
right?
But he's on the field. So he exactly. He needs to be treated the same way.
All right, let's do as many as we can jam in here before MLB
we'll do it real quick.
Okay. Plug on us. Andrew Gilbert on Twitter asks the DDFP gang, what should new Colts head coach Josh McDaniels, and is that because of the league standard you're not allowed to announce? Colts can't announce Josh McDaniels. They can't introduce
while
him or
yeah,
anything.
Yeah, they're still alive.
But that one is all but done. I don't think anyone's much. Debating at this point that McDaniels is
yeah.
the coach of the Colts. So, all right, so what should new Colts head coach Josh McDaniels do about Andrew Luck and Jacoby Brissett? This feels like a no-brainer, assuming Andrew Luck is healthy, the Wolf. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, if Andrew Luck is healthy, then you have to go with Luck. You have to just see where he is. And maybe he's not the same quarterback that he was before. You don't know how everything's going to heal up. And if that's the case, then you have Jacoby Brissett there. I mean, the kid is really talented.
Now, I'm going to go in a totally different way here, and just stick with me here.
Okay.
If I'm Josh McDaniels and I have Jacoby Brissett and Andrew Luck, I'm going to trade Andrew Luck and get me as much as I can for him.
But no one's going to take him. He's a $100
healthy,
million dollar man. We don't know what he is.
How many people need quarterbacks? You don't think Arizona would take him?
I think someone
healthy,
would take him.
If you know he's healthy.
Yeah, a lot of people would take him. I would trade him, get his, because you need to build the team.
Broncos took the chance on Peyton Manning.
Yeah.
That worked out.
So are you starting Luck then? Are you going to start him?
I'm going to trade Luck when I get there. And then I'm going to play with Brissett.
I love that idea.
I know Jacoby Brissett. Remember, I'm the one that taught him all this stuff. He knows my system.
So you're
he knows what we're
okay.
doing.
Sure.
I'm
yeah.
going to play
if
him.
You're Josh McDaniels,
and then I'm
going
to
sure.
trade Luck and try to get as much as I can for him pick-wise and compensation-wise so that I can use, you know, because you can probably get one.
So you want to do it right away for the draft this year. You would do it like
oh, yeah.
That.
Yeah, I need to get that because this draft is built to – it has everything that you need except for wide receiver. But you already have wide receivers there.
Unsurprisingly, we've gone long on this show. Eddie Spaghetti, our sideline reporter, caught up, though, with your pal, Maurice, Brandon Marshall.
Yes.
Ooh.
We'll play you that full interview next on the next show. But, we got right. jammed up here. Brandon Marshall, though, and Spaghetti, Eddie Spaghetti's real name is Eddie Murphy.
Yep.
And Brandon Marshall is obviously the second most famous Brandon Marshall. So they commiserated about that. You can find that on Facebook and or Twitter if you want to hear what they had to say. Meantime, they also offered a question for us. Let's take a listen now.
What's up, guys? I want y'all to tell me y'all favorite vacation memory. Get back to me on that.
Favorite vacation memory. That's what we're talking about. We don't have time for vacations, Brandon Marshall. You know what I remember? I told him this when I saw him the other day, Brandon Marshall. Before Super Bowl 50, we're walking around on the field 45 minutes before the Super Bowl.
Oh, my God.
Before the Super Bowl. That could be you, the Wolf, in 3 weeks'
stop,
time.
Stop. Don't even. I can't even
you could
get
be
there
slapping
yet.
Nick Foles on the back and say, go get him, Nicky.
Don't even put this out there yet.
He won't know who you are because you'll have a dog mask on.
That's true.
But he'll probably be wearing one, too.
I would, yeah.
45 minutes before the biggest game of his life, Brandon Marshall runs off the field. Runs off the field to come and hug Maurice Jones-Drew.
He's one of my babies, man. He was a young guy.
Like, hey, Maurice, what's up, man? And Maurice is a gentleman and says, right. Maurice is a gentleman. Is like, Brandon, this is my friend Shaq here, and I'm shaking hands with Brandon Marshall. Like, good luck in the Super Bowl, Brandon Marshall.
That was awesome.
It was surreal and crazy. And I said, what were you doing, man? What kind of behavior is that before the Super Bowl? And he said, well, Maurice is my guy. I got to come and say hello to him.
It's my guy.
Look, see, everybody loves MJD.
No. Brandon was a guy. He was a kind of a later bloomer in the league. And we saw him cover. He was athletic and could move. And I was like, you need to train the right way in the offseason. And I'd always offer people to come down to Miami and train with me. And he was like the only one that ever do it. And literally from that point on, the Jaguars cut him that offseason or that next season. He goes to Denver. And it just blew up because it fit what he could do. And then he trained in Miami ever since. He's been balling.
All right. Do him the solid. Where do you want a vacation? Foxborough? Well,
no, I thought it was your best vacation memory.
And that was going to Heinz Field in my second home.
I knew it was going to be something like that.
White Christmas, Brandon. If you ever get a chance to have one of those, you should do it.
The Wolf is going to bend the space-time continuum and claim this Sunday, celebrating the Eagles' victory over the Minnesota Vikings.
Nah, because it would have to be three Sundays from now. Like, it'd have to be in Minnesota. That would be the best vacation memory.
Speaking of that, you know, where everybody's talking about the three quarterbacks and Tom Brady. If Tom Brady, is it a wrap? Like, can Maurice, legitimately.
Don't talk to me about this.
Just listen to me.
I don't want to hear this right now, man.
If Tom Brady, whatever. I don't know what happens. It snows and they can't get to the game and they say, all right, it's just the Patriots win because they're the home. I don't know why. Because you're not going to accept the premise that the Patriots win the game. Let's say they're in Minnesota. If they get there, can either the Eagles or Vikings reasonably beat that team?
Yeah. They both have really good defenses, and the one thing that hurts the Patriots more than anything is pressure up the middle.
Yep.
If they can get pressure up the middle and get to Tom Brady, that's what hurts them.
The Jags can do that. I don't think the Vikings can do that.
The Vikings
can do that. I think the Eagles might be able to, but Nick Foles, come on, that's not gonna happen.
Yeah.
I'm rooting for you, the Wolf, but if you get the Jags, now that's something.
Then what happens?
Can you ask this last question?
Jags-Eagles is interesting, especially to listen to the two of you.
I'm sad. I didn't want to know MJD's best vacation memory.
Oh, yeah, you didn't answer.
Oh, literally, I just told you. Going to Heinz Field
really?
With my kids this past weekend was the best thing I've ever
done. No way.
It was awesome.
That's so cool.
It was awesome.
Dad.
Look, win or lose, it didn't matter. They had fun, and that's all I cared about. And then I didn't leave anything in the hotel room.
Right,
No one got sick. No one got hurt. It was like the best thing ever.
Success. That's a successful trip.
None of the chefs in the Pittsburgh restaurants took my advice and put a little. I don't want you to have serious injuries. Just something that kept you out of the stadium.
Shecks in the shadows, pulling the fire alarm.
Give a little of that to Len Fournette if you don't mind.
Can we do the second?
All right,
question.
One more, and then then we'll clear out of here.
Okay.
Bear Doss Tav Ross. What kind of name is that? Oh, come on.
Rolls right off the tongue.
It does.
Has Lev Bell played his last game for the Pittsburgh Steelers? Maurice, you talked to 26 right after the game.
I did. I don't think he did. I think he's going to play. They're going to try to get a long-term deal done, but they have to understand the price has gone up. Like, there's no way that you can tell me that he's not that vital piece to this team.
They got to keep him. They have to figure it out.
What I also can't tell you is how they get Roethlisberger, Antonio Brown, Lev Bell, all under the cap with what Lev Bell wants to get paid, and then still field a team.
You have to draft well.
All right.
That's what it comes down to. I mean, think about it. The franchise tag this year was $12.9 million. Next year is going to be $14-15 million. That's going to be the floor of whatever you're negotiating.
$17 million for 26 is.
Is that not what he's worth?
Listen, he's the best running back in the league.
He's the best player right now in the league.
Best player in the league.
Catch the ball.
Antonio Brown's
phenomenal.
Player.
Phenomenal. But he doesn't. The game can't go through Antonio Brown.
It makes me sick to say this. This is not a satisfying statement after the performance. An all-time performance from 84 against the league's
both.
Best defense. Seven and 26 all flushed down history's toilet now.
You keep going back to the game. I'm talking about Le'Veon Bell.
I'm telling you what the score is.
You
Antonio
think he's the
Brown.
Best player in the league?
I think that you can put him in any system, anywhere, and he'll flourish because of his skill set, his versatility.
I think he's
He could catch. He could play wide receiver. He could catch the ball. He could run the ball. He could do goal line, short yards, anything you want him to do. He can do it.
Can I tell you one thing that I will say just to turn it back to while we're talking about the Steelers? So I don't have to turn it back there. I will say the
never left.
The vibe coming off of these 48 hours since the game feels reminiscent of after they lost to the 15-1 Steelers lost to the Patriots in Heinz Field. Rather than it causing them to crumble, I feel like it's a rallying point a year too late.
Last year was a rallying
point. I thought so too. But yeah. I do feel like that they're saying the right things. Want to come back now, Roethlisberger.
Sorry, Shaq.
Yes, start that. Don't music. Be sorry for me. We'll have time to lament.
We'll pour one out for you. And the
drink
Steelers.
Your champagne, fancy pantses. Muzzle tough. To play the music. Keep get the me music. Out
Cheers.
Of here. I've had more than my fill.
Cheers.
Cheers.
To the two of you, may you both emerge victorious on Sunday.
Cheers.
Go get them. Have a gay time in your respective filthy stadium celebrating good times.
Hey.
Hey, what do you mean, filthy
is
stadium?
Is that Ken back there?
I like the
Speak
link.
For yourself.
I
Me
love
too.
The
whole world has been a thin slice of heaven.
It's all great. I wasn't ready to sign off yet. Play it already. Now go. And guess what? You know what?
What? Tell me.
I had it in my heart to talk trash to the Wolf.
Why?
I don't know.
There's only one Pennsylvania team left, and that's the Eagles.
Yeah.
No. There's a team in Pittsburgh called the Penguins. They're in L.A. I'm taking my boy to that on Thursday night. That's the best vacation ever. Been a thin slice of heaven.
So sad, Shaq.